Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers.
Krejci takes it away. Krejci to Coyle. And the Leafs are mulched again.
That's Nesson play-by-play man Jack Edwards calling the Bruins' Game 7 win over the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, as only he can. Never change, Jack. The Bees now advance to the second round of the playoffs, which start tomorrow night. And with us to break down the Bruins' postseason and other sports headlines is WBUR senior news writer Sarah Rose Brenner. Hey there, Sarah Rose.
Hi.
Also with us is Radio Boston producer Chris Siderick. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Callum.
All right, let's start with last night's game, Sarah Rose. This was a pretty back-and-forth series, sort of by definition when you get to a Game 7, but neither team had won back-to-back games. The Bruins finally did it, winning 6 and 7. How did they do it?
So last night specifically, the fourth line was everything. People don't really expect to get a lot of production from their fourth line. I liken it to, you know, if you have a catcher in baseball who hits a home run or has a high average, you're like, oh, wow, that's so great. I didn't see it coming most of the time. And the fourth line is the same thing. But last night, their fourth line was huge. Joakim Nordstrom and John Corrali, they both had a goal and an assist. Two of the Bruins' 5 goals came on an empty net. So that means that basically most of your production came from your fourth line. Corrali's goal specifically was a huge deal. It was a total momentum shift. In the second period, the Bruins still had the lead, but they gave up a goal. And then the Leafs, I know we'll talk more about Tuukka in a minute, but the Leafs, they had all the momentum. And then we went into, you know, the second intermission, a little dejected as Bruins fans. But then Corrali came out and he scored less than 3 minutes into the third period, and the Bruins never looked back.
And yeah, Chris, such a huge goal. I mean, a one-goal lead is nothing, really, in playoff hockey. That can turn like that, and especially with the history that these two franchises have. This is the third time in 7 years that the Bruins have beaten the Leafs in a Game 7, and I think that Corrali goal really broke the back of the Maple Leafs. They just looked a little bit slower, a little bit dejected after that goal.
Well, especially the fans out in Toronto in the parking lot when they were watching on the Jumbotron. They looked very sad.
Live for those shots.
You know, we do have a history, though, Sarah Rose, as you note that the fourth line is not usually where you get your production in hockey generally, but I'm thinking back to Sean Thornton, Campbell, Paille, the Merlot line, right? I mean, the fourth line is kind of a thing for the Bruins in recent years. That was what helped them win the Cup in 2011. We love those underdogs here in Boston as hockey fans.
Yeah, no, we do love the underdogs, but like when I think about Sean Thornton, if we're being honest, I think about a bruiser, I think about a fire, I think about a dressing room guy who's getting your team fired up, but I don't really think of burying pucks. And I mean, Sean Crowley's goal, it was that's not normally what I associate with the fourth line.
It was art. I love it. All right, I can't do it. But you know who else was pretty artistic in his own way last night, Sarah Rose, was Tuukka Rask, right? And he's gotten a lot of criticism, which is, hey, he has a hard job. He's following Tim Thomas, one of the best playoff goaltenders in Bruins history, maybe the best. But he looked awfully good last night. What did you see?
He was tremendous. I mean, entering last night, he was 2-2 in Game 7s. Not great. He was giving up close to 4 goals a game. But last night, he proved me and a lot of other doubters in the city wrong. I mean, more than 30 saves. The one goal that he gave up, it was in the second period. And sometimes I get concerned, you know, a goalie could get in his own head. But Tuukka did not. I mean, the Leafs peppered him with shots, and he stopped all of them for the rest of the period. So, you know, it didn't feel great in second intermission just because Leafs had all the momentum and they looked ready to win it all. But Tuukka, he stopped everything.
And he talked about this after the game, too. He certainly has felt physically prepared in previous postseasons, but he said that this time around the key was to staying focused.
Yeah, the Game 7 is, it's a do-or-die situation, so you obviously want to play as good as you can. But, you know, if you kind of let your mind wander too much, then you're not going to be able to perform at your highest level.
So, Chris, you know, having a good Tuukka Rask in the second round is going to be really important. I'm mindful, too, though, that the home ice has to help as well. I mean, that crowd was rocking last night.
Absolutely, and that's actually the exact phrase that Tuukka used in his postgame interview, that the Garden was rocking, and it was so loud you almost couldn't hear the announcers at times. That environment is huge. Players feed off that energy, and it's going to be big going forward, too.
So, Sarah Rose, this second round matchup, which starts tomorrow night, the Bruins do have home ice, as we said, and they'll be playing the Columbus Blue Jackets. This looks like a dangerous team because they knocked out the top seed, the Tampa Bay Lightning, seemingly a juggernaut, Sarah Rose. What are we watching out for here in Columbus?
So I think, honestly, the Bruins match up better with Columbus than they did with Toronto. Toronto is a fast team, and Columbus, you know, they have more of a grinded-out style like the Bruins have. So I actually feel better about this series than I did playing Toronto. these two teams specifically, they only played three times this season, but it was all in the last month of the season, so they're super familiar with each other. Bruins took two of those games, but, you know, since then, the Blue Jackets swept out Tampa Bay, and they were the best team. They won the President's Trophy for the best record in hockey. That's never happened before. The best team in hockey has never been swept out of the playoffs, and now the Blue Jackets did it. One of last night's heroes, Sean Corrali, he's actually from the Columbus area, and he knows it's going to be a really hard matchup.
They're playing really well and probably one of the hottest teams in the league right now after taking down Tampa. So, I mean, you can see from 5,000 fans at practice, it's a heck of an atmosphere there, and they're playing really well, and they're going to be a really tough team.
I think it's going to kind of come down to this whole rest versus rust thing. The Bruins only have one day off. Today's their only day off. They're not practicing, but it's still only one day. Well, the Blue Jackets, they haven't played since last week. Before that, they won six straight games, including the four-game sweep, but their last loss came against the Bruins.
Interesting. Well, that bodes well, let's hope. So the Bruins don't have much time off. Other Garden tenants, the Boston Celtics, Chris, have had a bit of a layoff because they swept their way through the first round. And we don't even know actually when their second round series is going to begin. But whenever it does, they'll be playing the Milwaukee Bucks. And this time they're going to have to go on the road. I guess what I'm wondering, Chris, is this team finally putting it all together at the right time? We know they had a lot of chemistry problems during the season.
Yeah, we've talked about that, about how guys are trying to find their role. And it almost seemed that they had too much talent on this team. I know that's kind of a weird phrase to think about, but there's only so many minutes and only so many shots to go around, and it felt like guys were kind of competing with each other for their chances. I actually think, and I hate to say this because I love Marcus Smart as a player. He's probably their best defender, but he tore his left oblique a couple of weeks ago, and going down with an injury, that frees up some extra minutes, frees up some extra shots, and it kind of looks like the Celtics have had more balance and played more cohesively as a team since then. I think that they are gelling and coming together. We've thought that three or four times during the regular season this year, so, you know, the future will tell us. But I'm optimistic, I'll say that.
Well, Sarah Rose, on the idea of a silver lining to an injury, we saw this last year, right, when without Kyrie Irving and without Gordon Hayward, the Celtics came within a game of making the finals last year. So could there be something to that notion, that the team maybe gets a little bit better when its back is against the wall or it's a little bit shorthanded? I mean, could this team make a deep run like we saw last year?
I mean, I think that they are definitely capable of making a deep run, but I never want to say like, oh, yeah, they'll play better without one of their best players. But they still have, you know, Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, so I still feel pretty good about them.
Yeah, far cry Kyrie Irving to Marcus Smart.
I was trying to be generous.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked about Kyrie and some of the attitude over the year and some of the things he's said to the other players that have been a little condescending. But the bottom line is, this is why you get a superstar like Kyrie, is for these moments. And you saw that in the series with the Indiana Pacers. Come down the final stretch of the fourth quarter, you need to have a guy who says, give me the ball, I'm going to take over this game. Kyrie Irving is one of five or six players in the league that can do that and can do that well.
All right. If the Celtics had some chemistry problems, Chris, I'm not sure what the problem is with the Red Sox right now. But it is something. And it would seem to not be chemistry, because this is basically the same clubhouse that won the World Series last year. In the moments that we have left, what is going on with the Sox right now?
Oh, I mean, how much time you got? first of all, it's April. Baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. So I think it's too early to push the panic button. But there are some serious concerns with this team. You felt like after they swept the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend, they won three games there, that felt like, okay, maybe they're getting back on track. And then yesterday, they lose both games of a doubleheader against Detroit. Their offense has been struggling. They haven't been able to score runs. And really, a concern we had coming into the year, Chris Sale, he doesn't look like the same pitcher. He's lost a little velocity. He's not missing bats the same way. He's not striking guys out the way he has been in the past. We'll have to see if he's right as the season goes on.
No, well, at least they didn't commit a lot of money to... Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, exactly.
Massive contract.
Exactly.
Sarah Rose, what do the Sox have to do to get the ship right?
Literally everything. No, I'm kidding, but not really. I think a few of the things that they lost in the offseason, they're small things, but it's important. I mean, your bullpen is kind of gutted. You don't have any setup guys. You don't have a closer. I know the bats aren't like wicked loud, but pitching, you got to start with the pitching.
Yeah, speaking of pitching, Nathan Eovaldi had surgery yesterday to remove loose bodies in his right elbow. That's concerning. He missed about 2 months with a similar procedure last year. So they are hurting both in the starters and in the bullpen. They definitely need pitching help.
So basically everything. The starters,
yeah,
the middle reliever,
yes,
and the closer. Aside from that, they're fine. That's WBUR senior news writer Sarah Rose Brenner. Sarah Rose, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Also, Radio Boston producer Chris Siderick. Chris, thanks for being here as always.
Thanks for having me, Kel.